All right, let's continue on here. Now, it's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. You read the arguments of those three men leading up to this part of the Bible, and these arguments get pretty weighty. And they accuse Job of all kinds of things, and they were absolutely wrong. So here we come to chapter 32, and it says in verse 1, and these three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Job 32, verse 1. Righteous in his own eyes. Much like the Pharisee that went to pray, remember? And the publican? Pharisee came in and said, God, I thank you. I'm not like other men. I'm not an extortioner. I haven't committed adultery. I tithe all that I have. And I'm certainly not like this terrible tax collector down here. See? So the tax collector beat on his chest and said, God, forgive me, the sinner. So Job was just like one of the Pharisees, righteous in his own eyes. And so then we have Elihu, the son of Basharel, the Buzite of the family of Ram. His wrath burned against Job because he had justified himself rather than God. Very key, important sentence there. But he waited, finally opened his mouth and said, I'm just like wine in a new wineskin and I'm ready to burst. So he said, I waited for you old men because I thought the aged would be wise. But I found that that wasn't so. So he says, I'm going to speak. Okay? Let's come here to chapter 33. We begin to see how this unfolds. Okay? Verse 1. Wherefore, Job, please hear my speech and hearken to all my words. Behold, now I've opened my mouth, my tongue is spoken in my mouth, my words shall be from the uprightness of my heart, and my lips will clearly speak knowledge. The Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. If you can, answer me, set yourself in order before me, stand up. Behold, I'm according to your wish in God's stead. I'm also formed out of the clay. Behold, my terror shall not make you afraid, and my burden shall not be heavy upon you. Surely you have spoken in my ears, and I've heard the sound of your word saying, I am pure, without transgression. I am innocent, and there is no iniquity in me. So you start adding it up. He was righteous in his own eyes. I mean, boy, you know, that's what he said back here in chapter 31. He had done all of these things. There's no sin. Okay. Let's go on. Verse 10. Behold, he finds occasion against me. He counts this. He's talking of God. He counts me as the enemy. He puts my feet in the stocks. He marks all my paths. Behold, in this you are not right. I will answer you, for God is greater than man. So what was Job's sin? What was Job's sin? He was self-righteous. He didn't say anything wrong with himself. Everything that he did was right. But what did his attitude do? Okay. The key right here is in verse 12. He made himself greater than God. Now, how did he do that? And we'll learn a lesson concerning God's laws and things from that. Okay, going on, verse 13. Why do you fight against him? For he does not give account for any of his matters. No, he doesn't. Okay, let's come over here to chapter 34. Verse 1, Elihu answered and said, Hear my words, O you wise men, and give ear to me, you who have knowledge. For the ear tries words as the palate tastes food. Let us choose for ourselves what is right, and let us know among ourselves what is good. For Job has said, I am righteous, but God has denied me justice. God was not fair. Now, you might agree with that or not, but how was it that God was fair? Verse 6, Job continued to say, should I lie against my right, my wound cannot be cured. I am without transgression. How did that happen? What man is like Job who drinks up scorn like water, who goes in company with the workers of iniquity and works with wicked men? He didn't do that. Verse 9, for he has said, it profits a man nothing when he delights himself in God. Well, that's quite an accusation, isn't it? Therefore, hearken to me, O you men of understanding. Far be it from God to commit iniquity, and from the Almighty that he should commit iniquity. For the work of a man shall he render unto him, and cause every man to find according to his ways. Yet surely God will not do wickedly, neither will the Almighty pervert judgment. Then he starts out to set the record straight. So this becomes quite important here. Okay? Verse 13. Who has given him charge over the earth? Or who has appointed him over the whole world? Job didn't. No man did. Okay? Now we can go on. We can look at some other things here. Let's come down to chapter 36. Now you can read all the rest of it here. Let's come to the last part of chapter 35 here for just a minute. Okay? Verse 35, Job has spoken without knowledge, and his words were without wisdom. My desire is that Job may be tried unto the end, because his answers are like those of wicked men. What was his sin? Not only self-righteous. Yeah, verse 36, Job 35, or verse 34, beg your pardon. Can't count today. Job 34, verse 35, now verse 36. Okay, we have that? Okay. Job has spoken without knowledge, verse 35, and his words were without wisdom. My desire is that Job may be tried unto the end, because his answers are like those of wicked men. Now, how could that be? When he was doing all the things that he should be doing. Verse 37, for he adds rebellion to his sin, he claps his hand among us and multiplies his words against God. How could that be? Okay, verse 1, chapter 35 now. Elihu answered and said, do you think it is right that you say, my righteousness is more than God's? So what was his sin? He made himself greater than God. Yet whose laws was he following? God's. See? Does that not help explain about the parable of the unprofitable servant? Yes. Not only are we to do what God says, but we are to thank God for everything that gives us the ability to do so, and that it is all God's righteousness. See? That's what Job failed to do. My righteousness is more than God's. Verse 3, for you say, what advantage will it be to me? What profit shall I have more than if I had sinned? I will answer your words, you and your companions with you. Look to the heavens. See, what have you done, Job? All you've done is keep what God has said, and you claim that as your own. Basically what it is. Look to the heavens and see, behold the clouds, they are higher than you. If you sin, what do you do against him? Or if your transgressions are multiplied, what do you do to him? If you are righteous, what do you give him? Or what does he receive from your hand? Your wickedness may hurt a man like yourself, and your righteousness may profit the Son of Man. By reason of the multitude of oppressions, they cry out. They cry out because of the powerful arm of the mighty, but none says, where is God my maker? Who gives songs in the night? Who teaches us more than the animals of the earth and makes us wiser than the birds of heaven? There they cry, but he gives no answer because of the pride of evildoers. Verse 13 is a key. Surely God will not hear vanity, neither will the Almighty regard it. Isn't it the vainest thing in the world to say, my righteousness is more than God's? When any righteousness we do comes from God. How much less when you say you do not see him, the cause is before him, you must wait for him. Now because it is not so, he has visited you in anger, yet he does not understand his great extremity. No, Job didn't understand it. Therefore, Job has opened his mouth in vain. He multiplies words without knowledge. Boy, this is getting pretty heavy stuff. Now, what I want you to think about, let's translate this into the one who's going to be the Antichrist, who comes and sits in the temple and says, I'm God. Okay. Now, let's look at chapter 36. Elihu also proceeded and said, bear with me a little, and I will show you that I have yet to speak on God's behalf. I will fetch my knowledge from afar, and I will ascribe righteousness to my Maker. See, nowhere in all of it did Job say, I have given to the needy because God has given to me to give to them. He didn't ascribe righteousness to his Maker. And this is another whole key for the new covenant too. Having the Spirit of God and being able to do the things of God by being converted and having the Spirit of God, it all comes from God, like Paul said to the Corinthians. What makes you greater than anyone else? You didn't have anything you didn't receive. Okay? I mean, everything about our whole existence is because we receive it from God. Is that not true? Everything. So we can apply that to commandment keeping. Why do we keep the commandments? Is it from the heart because we love God and we're thankful that God has given us the knowledge and understanding to be able to do so? Or are we like Job and the Pharisees to say, oh, I'm righteous and you stand far off from me? See? When we do that, we make ourselves greater than God. Okay, let's come down here a few more verses. All right. Okay, let's come here to verse 22. Verse 22. Behold, God is exalted in his power. Who is a teacher like him? And yet, what did Job say? I'm so righteous that what I really need is an umpire to stand between me and God and to judge me and find me innocent before God. His sin was he didn't ascribe all the righteousness to God. See that? Now think of this in relationship to how, and we all do this, don't we? Right? Every human being on earth, including us, when we see other people, we make judgments in our minds as we are observing them. Is that not correct? Yes, indeed. See? How they walk, how they talk, how they dress, etc. We make judgments concerning those things. Now, that's not entirely wrong to do. We have to make judgments, of course. But then when we use that to exalt ourselves, when we use that to say, we're better than the other people, we have forgotten that God calls the weak and the lowly, the rejected and despised, okay? See, that's what we are. So that he can confound the world. See, God is going to do a tremendous thing. Like I said last night, don't forget the dot. See? Because at the resurrection, what we do now is going to be compared to that little dot. See? And it all comes from God. Okay. Verse 23, who has appointed him his way? Or who can say, you have done wrong. God, you're wrong. All right, well, a lot of people would say that concerning the death of what they would call innocent children. Okay. A lot of death and destruction, right? Why would God do that? Well, look at the society around. God hasn't done wrong. Are we not born with the law of sin and death within us? Yes, indeed. And if he never gave them an opportunity for salvation, God is going to make it right in the second resurrection. God knows. God understands. He hasn't done any wrong. All men have seen it. Men may see it afar off. Behold, God is great beyond our knowledge. The number of his years cannot be searched out. For he draws up the drops of water. They distill into rain from the midst. Mist, which the clouds pour down and drop on man abundantly. And you know, when I fly and look out, now this happened when I was flying from Pensacola up to Dallas. And here were these great billowing clouds, huge, just towering clouds that you could see just growing. And in order to get to Dallas, we had to fly the highest I have ever flown in a commercial plane. We had to go to 44,000 feet. And there, as we're going up and I'm looking down and seeing all these clouds, I said to myself, how does God hold up these clouds? How do these clouds hold all that rain? And how does it come down to the earth? And you see, God has made everything that there is in the universe so that we can understand that we can't fathom his greatness or his existence except to give him glory and honor for all that he has done and give great thanks for his calling. Who are we that God would call us? You know? Well, we'll ask God that when we see him. Who can understand the spreading of the clouds or the crashing thunder of his canopy? Behold, he spreads his light upon it and covers the depths of the sea. Talk about lightning. There's lightning going on the earth all the time. And they didn't discover it until, I think about a year or two ago with the satellite photograph. They finally got a picture of it. When there is thunder and lightning coming down on the earth, there is a great flash that goes up about 200,000 feet out of the atmosphere. And this is happening all the time, every time there's a great electrical storm. I don't know what that means. When I saw the picture of it, I thought, yes, this is incredible. Okay. You know, like even the book of Job says, the earth hangs on nothing. How does that happen? By God's power and magnetics and so forth. But how does that happen? Well, it comes from the sun and Jupiter. But how does that happen? How did he make and create the sun and put it just in the right spot? All of this for us. That's why we're to be thankful and grateful to God for everything, see? And this is what Elihu is telling Job. Okay? Now, you can read all of chapter 37 because it gets real, real wordy here. So let's come over here to Job 38. Now then, it starts getting really interesting. Okay? Job 38. There's one particular verse in here really hits the nail on the head. So God finally gets involved because Job said, I want to speak to God. So there's a good example. Be careful what you ask for. Okay. Verse 1, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now gird up your loins like a man, for I will demand of you, and you shall answer me. If you're righteous, Job, if you say it's greater than mine, meaning you have greater ability than me, answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare it if you have understanding. Oh, he wasn't even conceived, wasn't even thought of. Who has determined its measurements, if you know? Or what has stretched, or who has stretched the line upon it? On what are the foundations fastened? And who laid its cornerstone? Now, I've looked at the globe many times over. I still haven't figured it out. Says the four corners of the earth. Now I can figure the North Pole and the South Pole, but I can't figure the rest of it. How can you have four corners on a sphere? Don't know. Same way here. When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Or who has shut up the sea with doors when it broke forth as it came from the womb? I mean, look at this huge trench that goes right up alongside Japan. The deepest part of the ocean is there. What is it, 15 miles deep at that point? Can you imagine that? Boy, I tell you, the force and power of that earthquake to move the main island of Japan 8 feet to the northwest. That blows my mind. I mean, how strong was Job? Could he pick up 200 pounds? Let alone move the main island of Japan? And when I heard that and heard what happened when the earthquake took place, it affected the rotation and timing of the earth, and I thought, woo, what's it going to be like when God rises to shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything, you know? Okay, verse 9. When I made the clouds its robe that is around the earth and thick darkness a swaddling band for it, I prescribed my limit on it and set bars and doors and said, you shall come to here, but no further. Here your proud waves shall stop. Have you commanded the morning since your days began? Did you get up, Job, and say, sun, rise? Okay. And cause the dawn to know its place? No, no, don't come up over there. Come up over here. See? That it might take hold of the ends of the earth, that the wicked might be shaken out of it. It is changed like clay under a seal, and they stand forth like a garment. But the wicked, but from the wicked their light is withdrawn. The uplifted arm is broken. Have you entered into the springs of the sea? Imagine that. What are the springs of the sea? The currents, what are those currents called? That keep everything going in the sea? They go clear around the world and come up by where North Atlantic and warms it, and then it goes back down to the bottom of the ocean where it is cold and goes around the earth and comes back. And I thought, you know, wonder what that was like, because he said he walked in it. Entered into the springs of the sea, or you walked in search of the depths. God could do that. Imagine that. He doesn't need a diving bell. He can just go there. Have the gates of death been opened to you? You know how to overcome death, Job? No, none of us can. We don't even figure out aging, except we count days and we get grayer and more wrinkled and all this sort of thing comes along, right? Have you seen the gates of the shadow of death? Have you surveyed the breadth of the earth? Now, I like this sentence. Declare it if you know it all. So Job's sin was in claiming that his righteousness was greater than God's. He was a know-it-all. Okay? And none of these things he could answer. None of those things could he answer. All right. So then he keeps on explaining. Let's come here to chapter 40. Everything is compared with the creation of God. Now, how many of you, what was this book that I read? Forget what the title of it was. But here was a biologist who was studying the quantum physics in the body. Okay? And how the cells are made. And did you know that transistors follow that pattern on how cells work? The biology of belief, yes. He said, now he believed in God because none of those cells could do anything differently than what they were created to do. Now, another thing. How many have heard of Dr. Comfort, the one who answers Hawkins, the atheist, you know? Okay. I'm not quite done with that book. But he goes through and knocks down all the arguments of the evolutionist and everything. And James gave me a book here, What Darwin Got Wrong. Everybody's got a lot of stuff wrong. They're all like Job, see? All of these atheists are like Jobs. But they have to have a big bang. God would say, go get your big bang. Don't come and steal mine. Get your own dirt. Don't start with mine. But he's got one chapter in there that is absolutely fantastic, which is this. They cannot explain the reproduction of the species and evolution. Because in order to create from any sexuality of anything, be it plant, be it animal, be it insect, be it human beings, you must have male and female, correct? And they must both be compatible for each other or it won't reproduce, correct? So sexuality proves God. Therefore, there cannot be any intermediate species except in the figment of the imagination of atheists who have good artist skills. See? And it's also known, just as an aside here, that the communists tried to crossbreed humans and apes so they could get a super fighting soldier. Didn't work. So if humans came from apes, why wouldn't it work? Now you can crossbreed cattle and buffalo and get a beefalo, but it's only good for one generation. You can cross a horse and a donkey and get a mule, but it can't reproduce. Okay? Someone told me about calico cats. Male calico cats are sterile. So how can you have any evolution, see? So sex proves there is no evolution. And out of this, God is saying with all the animals and everything that he's done around the world, proving his greatness and his creative powers. So how can a man say, my righteousness is greater than my creator? So what was his sin? His sin was, he was saying, I am God. And his righteousness, because he did not ascribe it to God, and claimed it for himself was then setting himself up to judge God. And that was his sin. So whatever we do in the way of obeying God, keeping his commandments, whatever we do, we need to always acknowledge that it is God as the originator of it. And what a fantastic thing that he's given us life, that he's made us the way that he has made us, and that now he has called us. And all of it comes from him. See? And all of it comes from his Spirit. That's how we understand these things, brother. Okay, now let's read parts from chapter 40. So Job got his wish, and the Lord answered Job and said, "Shall he who contends with the Almighty instruct him? He who reproves God, let him answer it." You going to come and correct me? God says. Well, now, stop right here. Think of all the religions in the world, and what do? They correct God. They reject God. They reject his Sabbath, reject his holy days, and claim their own righteousness, and stand in the pulpit and accuse God of doing away with his law, when God is the one, by his law, by his power, by his creation, upholds everything by the word of his power. And then they create a religion with their own righteousness, whatever that may be. You ever heard of the sacrifice of the Mass? An abomination before God. Have you ever heard of the rat temple in India? Or the snake temple? The worship of cows? Bathing in urine? I don't know what they do with the excrement, but, you know, who knows? It's holy. See what man has done? And who is the author of all of that? Satan the devil. See? Okay. You going to correct God? Oh, we don't need the Sabbath. We've got something better. You better be thankful that God is not coming down to answer you right away to say, "Who are you to say that my Sabbath is a curse?" When I say, if you keep it and call it blessed of the Lord, I will be with you. Verse 2, Job answered and said, what's he going to say? See? "Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer you? I will lay my hand on my mouth once I have spoken." Oh, you spoke more than once. "But but I will not answer, yea, twice, but I will proceed no further." So God puts Job to the test right here. If you're as great as you think you are, and if you're as righteous as you think you are, and if you have ignored all my creation and all the power, all the things that I have done, all the wondrous things that you cannot even explain, and I have lived through all eternity, and you know nothing about that, Job. So he says, out of the whirlwind, verse 7, "Gird up your loins now like a man, and I will demand of you, and you declare to me, will you annul my judgment?" Everything that God has done has been by his judgment, correct? Creation, laws, statutes, correct? "Will you condemn me so that you may be righteous?" That was his sin. What does this tell us? When you have the righteousness like the scribes and Pharisees, you condemn God because you say yours is greater. And when you say yours is greater, you reject God. See? Now, no place, we'll talk about that this afternoon, no one thing epitomizes what I just said more than the Passover. We'll talk about this afternoon, okay? So then he says, okay, Job, get your best suspenders and stand up and put your thumbs under him and listen up. Okay. "Have you an arm like God?" Okay. And I get a kick out of these athletes whenever they do something great, you know. Look at those biceps. They could fall off and nothing flat. You'll Or can you thunder with a voice like his? Deck yourself now with majesty and excellency. In other words, make yourself a glorious spirit being. And array yourself with glory and beauty. So here he is. Pitiful. Scabs from head to toe. Maggots eating the pus. Dust and ashes all over him. Completely disfigured and distorted because of everything that he went through. Boils from head to toe. Where's your beauty, Job? Show me your glory, Job. You're rotting right in front of my eyes, Job. Okay? Now, after you glorify yourself, verse 11, cast abroad the rage of your wrath, and behold everyone who is proud and abase him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low and tread down the wicked in their place. Hide them in the dust altogether and bind their faces in darkness. Then I will confess to you that your own right hand can save you. See? You need two things to save you. God's Spirit and God's laws, and you ascribe all the righteousness to God. That's how it comes. See? Now, when you do that with the grace of God, this lifts a great burden off you. And this is why he has given his Spirit to cleanse us, to help us, to teach us, to reprogram our minds to the mind of Christ in preparation for the resurrection. So that was the sin of Job. He made himself God, but couldn't perform. And he accused and condemned God when there was absolutely no reason to do so. And his three friends didn't understand that. So what is a greater sin? Thinking that your righteousness is as good as or greater than God's. See? In that case, you have no need of God, because you are God. Now, there will be a time at the resurrection when we will be part of the family of God. But that's going to come how? God's way and his time. So let's go ahead and end here. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.